Hello, everyone, and welcome to Negotiating Ideas, a podcast about political thought on democracy and pluralism. This is Omar Sadr, a senior research scholar at University of Pittsburgh Center for Governance and Markets. In this episode, I chat with Hakmal Daoudzai, who works as a researcher at Dutch Royal Academy in Amsterdam. His book, The State Building Dilemma in Afghanistan, The State Governmental Design at the National Level, and Rule of Democratic Provincial Councils in Decentralization at the Subnational Level, was published by the Barbara Budrich Press right after the fall of Kabul to the Taliban in 2021. This book empirically reviews the U.S. intervention and subsequent state and institutional design at Afghanistan's national and subnational levels since 2001. In this episode, I ask him about one of the key propositions of the book, mainly constitutional democracy in Afghanistan. Hakmal, welcome to Negotiating Ideas.
Good morning, Omar. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Let me start by asking you a general question. Tell us about yourself and how did you come across, how did you frame your research interests around constitutional democracy in Afghanistan?
I'm an Afghan citizen. I've lived in Afghanistan. I've studied in Afghanistan and followed the Afghan politics very closely. And besides that, I worked during 2011 and 2011 for the Afghan Parliament, and was regularly going to the plenary sessions of the Afghan Parliament and following the debates. So this was a time where I really got interested in Afghan state institutional design, because you would see different parties, different people were coming and discussing about different issues. That was the time where I was really interested and thinking about what kind of political system would be an appropriate system for Afghanistan, which then I also continued my master's studies in political science and my PhD, particularly in state building in Afghanistan.
Sure. So in your writings, you propose that Lechpart's idea of constitutional democracy might be better for accommodating a country which has socio-political complexity like Afghanistan. So tell me more about that. How do you think that constitutional democracy fits better in case of Afghanistan?
Before going to answer your question, I think if we just have a look into the Afghan constitution, which was adopted in 2004, you see that Afghanistan installed a very strong unitary centralized state system in theory. But in practice, you see right from the Bonn process, the Afghan government was established based on ethnic elite power sharing. In the Bonn Conference, you see that the first time Afghan political parties were not political parties, but ethnic groups were divided along the ethnic lines. And that process continued even after the 2004 constitution and the election. Which we had in practice an ethno-elite power-sharing government at the national level, and at the sub-national level, you would see that power was hijacked by some warlords and tribal elites. So this was the idea that came in mind, and I studied the Afghan state-building process critically and came up to the idea that maybe a possible and plausible solution would be that if we could see an alternative government system, which is, in this case, for a country which is ethnically divided, would be constitutional democracy. And constitutional democracy actually proposed a kind of ethno-elite power-sharing government at the national level and local autonomy at the sub-national level. Which for the case of Afghanistan, if you read my book, I'm not really proposing it the way Aaron Leopard is proposing it, but I'm just thinking maybe it was thinking at the time when still Afghanistan had its democratic system. that maybe this would be a possibility to contextualize this system in the case of Afghanistan, because we have to also keep in mind that, yes, Afghanistan is ethnically divided, but not a divided state as we could apply in other contexts, which is then would be called like deeply divided society. Yes, one of the major failure of the Afghan government system was that it was highly centralized, it was unitary, but also
let me intervene
from
here.
The legitimacy of the state institution. So the idea is that if you want to legitimize that arrangement that we had in the past 20 years, then constitutional democracy would be a proper solution.
Sure. Let's come to constitutional democracy in a while. But I'm struck with one point that you just highlighted here, that Afghanistan is ethnically divided, but not as divided as we call a deeply divided society. So how do you differentiate between these two? Of course, the term deeply divided societies is something which recently more often come across, particularly with reference to countries like United States, wherein in terms of values, people are quite showing divergent tendencies, and there's no consensus on foundational values which should define a society. So how do you say that Afghanistan is ethnically divided but not a deeply divided society?
What I'm trying to say that we have to differentiate between ethno-political elites who are divided and who are... if we just see the experience of past 20 years that the ethno-political divide was existed in Afghanistan. But if you look into the general population in Afghanistan, they are still mingled in family relations and business relations. So and there was no any, even though we experienced civil war in Afghanistan and we had heated debates in the past 20 years, but it never came to a widespread motive or demand for a kind of separation, and which might be in other cases and in other countries. Like example, if we take the case in Europe and in Spain, the Catalanian case, or any other part of the country world, where you see that deeply divided society would then really go for their demands, but if you see the like in Afghanistan context, people still lived in proportional relative peace with each other, and one of the major thing is, if you see the in Afghanistan context, that even the ethno-political elites were divided along ethnic lines, but they would always put in their agenda that we are a unified country, we are still, a nation state. And that is, because they were afraid from the general population, they would lose their popularity if anybody would go for any alternative model, which was in the case of Afghanistan, that the idea of decentralization or any alternative system was taboo in the Afghanistan context. And that itself shows that people had a kind of understanding of the local context in which people didn't want to see themselves as divided as the political elites were.
Okay, interesting. But so you characterize that Afghanistan at the societal level, they are mingling with each other in neighborhood and family and businesses. But politically, again, even beyond elites, if we talk about citizens, don't you think deeply divided society need not necessarily be a society which has a secessionist movement? For example, United States doesn't have a secessionist movement at the moment, but when we talk about a deeply divided society, it's about values. So now let me ask you this. How do you characterize some common values, norms, or cultures which people, again, not elites, but I mean the mass of the communities, agree with each other, but politically, not just socially and economically? Do you think we have those sorts of values?
Definitely. I think if we see Afghanistan case, along the history, one of the major thing which brought the ethnic and tribal groups together and played as a legitimacy in the Afghanistan context for centuries was the Islamic ideology, you know, this Islamic culture which brought Afghans together. And this is, I would say, a collective value, identity, and legitimacy which you see in the Afghanistan context. Of course, at the local level, you would see that there are different values and subcultures that exist, but that were also peacefully accept this during the civil war, which was also that very played in the central level, we would say, but not, it was not in the level where you could you know, imply any other model into that.
Sure. So now, if you can go back to constitutional democracy, so one of the key challenges that such kind of states or democracies may entangle with is what is particularly with respect to ethnic parties and ethnic leaders who might tend to play a kind of entrepreneur role or ethnic entrepreneurship, what we call in our language tikadarane qaumi. And comparative politics literature, a key challenge which is highlighted with respect to ethnic parties is, I think, outbidding, where since the system is designed in a such manner that every ethnic party exclusively connects with their constituency, with ethnic constituency, and they may not be able or do not want to reach out to other groups. So that's why there might be an increasing tendency to become much more hardliner. And so that somehow the concept of what we call it outbidding. So how do you see that constitutional democracy that you propose? Of course, constitutional democracy is not a model of democracy because it may be designed in a different way in different contexts. But how your proposal will prevent such kind of scenario where ethnic parties or ethnic leaders may not go towards very hardline policies to only satisfy their own constituency and creates a scenario of outbidding?
Very well question. As I said before, what I'm proposing in the context of Afghanistan, I think it would be better to contextualize, to adapt the constitutional democracy in the context of Afghanistan. Especially also in this case, that the political parties, which in the case of Afghanistan are more ethnically at this level divided, it would not only not divide the Afghan society, but bring them together. Because we don't need to propose what exactly Leopard and his constitutional democracy proposed. But what I'm saying is that if we adapted into the Afghanistan context, which we had in the past 20 years, you see, the ethnic parties even made alliances along each other in order to win the elections. A Pashtun elite political party came together with a Tajik and with a Hazara in order to, you know, win the election. This is even, I would say, help in integrating the Afghan society and help them to come together instead of going for divisions. I think it's helping to show that if you want to go to win the election, you have to make compromises with other ethnic parties in order to win elections.
Sure. So let me remind our audience probably here that there are three key components in a constitutional democracy. Number one would be a grand coalition, which usually happens at the national level, but also the literature provides two other key elements, which is a veto power to some of the minorities who may exercise this right when their own substantial interest is violated, and finally segmented autonomy. So your point earlier is with reference to grand coalition, which happens at the national level, and you're saying that this should not be predetermined, it should somehow be self-determining, that different ethnic groups or leaders from different constituencies make join hands together and form a coalition. But what about veto power? Do you consider that also with respect to Afghanistan? Because veto power will also have a substantial potential, create a substantial potential for outbidding, where elites coming from different ethnic group may veto the decisions from other other, for example, communities or political parties. So how do you consider that?
Definitely, I think this is a very important aspect of this model, veto, because if ethnic minorities who feel that their interest is being threatened by a majority party in the state, they can veto that. And this, well, the negative side of this is that it would lead to political deadlock. But again, it is a kind of democracy which support the minority rights. But also in the other hand, it's also not from the other side, is also the veto right is what I propose in my model would be like the model I propose for Afghanistan, that the veto right should be also given to the president and the grand coalition sitting for the local autonomy reason, because it could be also that the one of the main critique on this democracy is also that maybe if you gave local autonomy to different groups, they might hijack that and use it for their personal interests, and also threaten the central government that if our interests are not being accommodated, we might go for secession. So that is the time where you can also go for a veto right, which the president might have the veto of or the dismissal of that provincial political party, or in the case of the constitutional democracy, which has different types. And what I propose is at the sub-national level is a devolution of power. In devolution of power, you have different models. You can also elect the provincial governor. The provincial governor could be also elected by the provincial council members. And what I'm focusing is that maybe if any provincial council or provincial governor then use their autonomy against the central government politics, then the president might also have the veto right, or the vice presidents, that they could stop or dismiss the local government. And again, the certain local government might also have the veto right to stop the central government from any decision that might go against their vital interests. So it's helping from both sides to keep the national integration and long-term stability.
Sure. And again, if I press you on the first element, which is grand coalition, so again, there are different models. The model which, for example, in Bosnia is there, the seats in government are reserved for particular ethnic groups. But on the other hand, alternative models where in Northern Ireland, for example, seats are not in government or not allocated for a particular ethnic group, but in the state somehow they automatically allocate to parties proportional to vote that they have in parliament. So now if I present you these two models between Northern Ireland and Bosnia, precisely how do you craft the system in Afghanistan when it comes to the grand coalition and government?
Well, I would not go for either of them. What I propose is that already experienced model that we had the past 20 years, which mm-hmm. was a kind of for 15 years in practice, which was a kind of grand ethno-political elite government at the center, but the constitution didn't mention seats to any ethnic party. The ethnic party was not mentioned. So if the constitution, because in the previous system that we had a president with two vice presidents. What I propose here is, due to the four dominant ethnic groups that we have in Afghanistan, what I propose is that if we could have a president with three vice presidents, just these seats, but not mentioning the ethnic parties, any ethnic party should have the right to go for the election and could save the presidential seat and then divide it and then choose their other ethnic parties that may be going in a coalition with them to run the government. And that helps once again, because that also helped to reduce from this critique in the case of Afghanistan that, well, any other model would divide Afghanistan farther and it will lead to succession. And in this case, if you would not specify constitutionally the ethnic groups, you still have, you still have the possibility to integrate them in a constitutional model, the Afghan divided ethnic groups.
But here again, the point is that in 2004 constitution, clearly it was stated that parties cannot be constituted across ethnic lines. So there was a deliberative effort to avoid any form of political formations, including political parties, around exclusive ethnic lines. But here it seems that indirectly in your proposal, you consolidate such kind of ethnic boundaries and ethnic lines, or assume that there are parties which represents different ethnic constituency. And if that is the assumption and that is formalized in the constitution, don't you think you clearly move the society towards a direction which even legally they will be allowed to form ethnic parties?
No, I think let's come to the fact. I think one thing we have in the Afghan society that we all, in the past 20 or 40 years, that we always denied that Afghanistan is ethnically divided. I think we should accept the fact that, yes, the society, not far and large, but the ethnopolitical elite are divided, and we should accept, first of all, this fact. Now again, coming back to the and it's, I think, not a very major problem. All the societies are divided along different lines. And in the case of Afghanistan, yes. And if we recognize that problem, we might go for a plausible solution. And but once again, in the case of Afghanistan, I'm not proposing that it should be mentioned in the constitution that that political parties should go along ethnic lines. But what we have de facto in Afghanistan, that we already have these parties, these ethnically divided parties, or parties based on ethnic identities. What I propose here is that if we we had not mentioned in the previous constitution that X and Epsilon ethnic group should have this and that seat, we should keep that principle also in a constitutional democracy for Afghanistan, which would then help integrate different political parties, ethnic political parties, to come together, to make alliances, to forge alliances, and to run for elections. Because you cannot convince people just simply by saying we are a unified country, but you should have create mechanism which bring different ethnic groups to work together for unified and stable democracy. And that would be a solution. And if you leave it like the way we left it in the previous regime, was also not a valid solution, because it also then create decreases from the legitimacy of the system that you had. We never practiced a centralized unitary system in the past 20 years. The system, the model we had, it was only in theory, but in practice, we had completely some sort of constitutional democracy, because the ethnic elite during the past 20 years, President Karzai as a Pashtun, then the first vice president, always a Tajik, the second vice president, Hazara or Uzbek, and a third seat was always created for the Uzbek or Hazara minorities. So what I'm proposing here, that why not we create a kind of model which we constitutionally recognize these four ethnic groups, but then leave them and not mentioning them that this seat should belong to that specific group, because Afghanistan is a minority country and there is no survey or study that shows that on this ethnic party has the majority. And even if it has a majority, it will lead to a kind of national integration process if ethnically political parties come together and make a joint political party, which then go for election and convince their constituencies, they might win election. Maybe an Hazara would be a president and the vice president would be a Pashtun or a Tajik or Uzbek. So it depends. But again, in the case of Afghanistan, what we are lacking also for this system is that, unfortunately, in the past 20 years, we also failed to make proper political parties. In the case of Afghanistan, the lack of professional or political parties which might be based on modern political ideology and clear political platform for the people, we didn't have such a thing. All the political parties we had were defined based on poor Islamic ideology, and they didn't have a clear format for the people to say, okay, which political party should I go for? The only thing we saw was, okay, any, if you say, for example, the Hizb-e-Wahdat party, you would already know that it's an Hazara party. If Hizb-e-Islami, it was a Pashtun dominant party. So I think if in all these contexts, if we see the Taliban manage to make a political party with a clear mandate and political strategy, which then it also, and also for a future government model that they dreamed of, that was the main political party in the past 20 years that also helped their constituencies to see, okay, if we choose Taliban, we might have a Islamic Sharia system. Whereas in other parties, nobody believed on that. If you go in Afghan street and ask local Afghans, even though Afghans are one of the politicized society in the world, they would not profess themselves that I'm Hizbi or I'm Jamiati, or they don't belong themselves to any of these parties because of several reasons. One, and because they had a very bad image in the past 40 years in the Afghanistan context, and nobody want to belong to any such parties, even though in practice they might, when the elections come, they might go because of their ethnic identities, they might support them. But in reality, all of these parties failed to accommodate Afghans and to convince them that they are they have a future for their country.
Okay, so now if we move on to the choice of electoral systems, how do you see the choice of electoral system impacting the incentive of ethnic leaders, elites, or parties when it comes to constitutional democracy? So again, particularly here, there have been two different alternatives to choice of electoral systems. Some scholars propose a party-less proportional representation, where they can encourage formation of a strong, cohesive political party. But in this choice, the party-less proportional representation, the party leader may have the ultimate say on how to sort the choices for the people. But alternatively, there are some other scholars who are coming from a deliberative constitutional democracy background. They propose single transferable vote, STV, where the people have, of course, they will have to pick their choices from the party list, but they can also sort these. The party leaders may not sort it, but it's the people who will who ultimately pick from different party lists according to their preferences. So deliberative constitutional democrats may say the choice for a single transferable vote will prevent a scenario of ethnic outbidding, where people will not exclusively choose from one ethnic party, but from different party systems. So I want to take your take on it. Now, what do you think about the choice of electoral systems?
Well, again, I think it comes back to the political party creation. Like, again, to my previous thing, which I mentioned, that in Afghanistan case, we lacked a strong political party system in Afghanistan, and that is again deciding which political, which electoral system you want to use for the case of Afghanistan. The SNTV that was used in the past 20 years was simply because Afghanistan was newly introduced to democracy. It was one of the simple electoral system where people could easily go and choose their favorite candidate in national election, but also in subnational elections. That was one of the major factor why this was introduced. But also, again, it was intentionally dead because, again, the Afghan elites, but also in the international community, didn't want to support the already existed political parties, which were, again, divided along the ethnic lines, and they had a bad image due to civil war. And this really, like, demoralized political parties, the creation of political parties, because people, if they would support any alternative to SNTV, then people would have to go behind political parties. And the plus point was, again, in SNTV, that it created new political faces in the context of Afghanistan. You know, it gave the chance for individual independent political leaders who wanted to engage in Afghan politics. It gave them the chance to come and play their role, which I see. I think this was a perfect model for the time, for that time. But of course, for any alternative model or for any alternative system in the future for Afghanistan, we definitely need to consider a different electoral system, and of course PR would be one, or if PTP would be another one, the first post. So but for the previous regime that we had, I think SNTV was quite successful, I would say, because it created, if you see, it gave the chance for women participation and at the subnational level. It gave also the chance for new elites that arise because of the system, that they had the possibility to participate individually in the politics. So I would say, yes, for the future, if you want to create a competitive system, political party which would compete with each other, and also the mobilization of political parties, we definitely need alternative model. And in the case of constitutional democracy, in case that is applicable for the case of Afghanistan, PR proportional representation would be also one of them.
Okay, so my last question, if I can ask you, is about your earlier remark. You referred to Afghanistan of 2001 to 2021 before the Taliban as a democracy. And I want to press you on this point, that do you think that Afghanistan was really a democratic system merely because it was holding elections? But by all other measures, Afghanistan did not satisfy even minimalist standards of a democracy. The fact that elections were continuously rigged, it was not free and fair, but also in so many other indicators that that a democracy may require, and that includes a kind of equal participation across civil public sphere, existence of an independent, very autonomous civil society, free media, a strong judiciary. These did not exist in Afghanistan. So do you still propose that Afghanistan had a democracy?
Well, I totally agree with you. Let's put it this way. I think Afghanistan had a very bad democracy, but it had a democracy. If you see the prior to 2001, we had an authoritarian regime. And post-2001, Afghanistan, for the first time in its history, experienced a completely different model, which was a constitution-based democracy, of course, in theory, but in practice, there were multiple factors that led to the failure of this democracy. And we know that is at a different level. Those who created and supported or built that democracy were the international community. There was no clear intention. The case of Afghanistan always came as a second, and but also at the regional level, none of our regional neighbors unfortunately supported the Afghan democracy. But again, at the national level, we also see that warlordism, corruption, the ethno-political elite divide or discourse also led the international community that they were fed up with the Afghans and the way the democracy was implemented. So it is, I think, from both sides, these factors played a great role in defaming the Afghan democracy and decreasing from its legitimacy. If you see in 2004, we had nearly 12 million turnout in the elections. But that decreases along the way because you see corruption, widespread corruption, and you see the democracy is not functioning. And in 2019, it decreases to 1.9 million participation or turnout of the people in the election. Yes, I would say it would be also unfair to label the very first and young experience of Afghan democracy as a completely failure. It did create a vibrant civil society. It created for the first time in Afghan history, brought politics to the subnational level. For example, at the subnational level, we, for the first time in Afghanistan history, we had provincial councils where people participated, where an inclusive though very weak, but for the first time in Afghan history, women had the chance to participate at the subnational level in this political institution as provincial councils. And they also challenged the central government in many cases. And that was also the fear why the Afghan leaders and the politicians repeatedly centralized the Afghan state institutions, because they were afraid that if we gave more power, our authority and our power would be a challenge. So this was an experience for the Afghans. And if we have any possibility in the future, we are already experienced with the notion of democracy, with this model. And I think that will help us then start from there, not from zero, as we started in 2001.
Sure. And I think this interview will remain incomplete if I do not ask you the question about post-Taliban scenario. We talked about democracy, constitutionalism, but it at this current context that Taliban are ruling Afghanistan with a very brutal feast, I think it is quite important to also talk about how shall we envision a post-Taliban scenario or a transformation. Would love to have your take on that. What do you think, what are the possible or even necessary steps that we should take in order to transform the country from the current context?
As I said, I think one of the main achievement that we have in the past 20 years that the majority Afghan population will introduce to kind of consensus-based state system, even if it was not functionable, but it created a kind of vibrant society, and especially the younger generation. And if we ever manage to either convince the Taliban, which is seem at this stage very difficult, but also if it ever happened that the Taliban go away by any means, I think Afghanistan would this time hopefully experiencing that, not taking the window of opportunity that they had in 2001. If we have any such window of opportunity in the future, they might take it seriously because they would know what they have lost by losing the Afghan democracy and having a very strong authoritarian regime. So I would say Taliban are the moment in the euphoria of winning the Afghan war, which is a huge mistake. And this mistake has been done by the Afghan political elite in 2001, which they were thinking, okay, we have won the Afghan war and there is no space for any other group in the country. This, I think, a huge mistake that the Taliban are doing, and they know that they cannot govern Afghanistan the way they are governing now. I would say it will be better for them to realize that that it's time to think for a long-term solution and not hijack the Afghan population based on their
I think we ideology. Have to leave it on that. Yeah. Thank you so much for appearing on Negotiating Ideas podcast. And it was a pleasure to record this episode with you. I hope our listeners also enjoyed listening to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Omar, for having me.